getting back to our cozy conversation the other evening about me building my own version of Emperor Titus's bloody paypen, i.e. my very own Colosseum Trayton Templeton here in Mannequin, I crooned, giving Ben, my chauffeur, a mischievous glance. "How could I forget it, sir?" replied Ben. "A doppelganger for Bart Simpson, and my major domo come chauffeur come part-time secretary, plus, and wittily described by yours truly, as my comrade in harms, a sobriquet for the ruthless man he undoubtedly was." Staring stonily ahead, his large hands fixed firmly on the horn steering wheel of the fire-engine red Bentley, Ben, or Ethan Ben, as I sometimes called him, his preference for my tongue-in-cheek reference to Tom Cruise's Ethan Hunt of Mission Impossible fame, as opposed to a more accurate reference to Bart S., gave a quick glance in the rear view to where Tornadoes, my Heinz 57 four-legged friend, lay dozing. Added to which, I'm sure neither has Mr. Tornadoes forgotten his lord and master's latest anticipated venture, he said. About to snap, "Do I detect a supercon of sarcasm there, Ethan Ben, or am I mistaken?" I said instead, "Talking of the Colosseum, did you ever see a film entitled Quo Vadis, starring rugged Robert Taylor, Peter unhealthy-looking Ustinov, and did see Deborah Kerr?" "A bit before our time, but well worth a viewing. You can catch it on Amazon Prime." "The one about Russell Crowe lookalikes and winsome Christians thrown to the lions while Peter Ustinov as a sneering Emperor Nero looks on?" "Yeah, I seen it, sir. May I ask why?" "Well, Ethan Ben, that's how I see myself," I said with a smug smile. "A 21st century Nero with glorious moi in the starring role." I gave a titter. "Glorious moi, whom everyone compares to Dickie Green, a.k.a. Jude Law, seen in the film The Talented Mr. Ripley. However, instead of a toga and fiddling while Rome burns, I'll be wearing a purple silk mankini with Gucci sandals, sans socks, of course, and a laurel wreath from Sophia Hannah Flowers." I gave a further titter. "And instead of fiddling, I'd much prefer to be diddling. I mean, what else would a bored, dashing, handsome, well-hung young billionaire be expected to do?"
"What else indeed, sir?" chuckled Ben. "That, if nothing else, should get the locals buzzing." He gave a backward nod. "Out of interest, sir, what will Tornadoes be wearing?" I said. "A bejeweled collar, purple silk coat with a miniature laurel wreath, attached to his excuse for a tail, of course," I replied without hesitation. "Of course, sir," buttered Ben. "What else?" There was a moment's silence before he said matter-of-factly, "Getting back to your planned Colosseum, sir, would this be housed, if that's the correct term, in one of those existing barns, or be a completely new structure?" "Oh, definitely a new structure, Ethan Ben. A soundproof barn, incorporating a theatre in the round, as it were, set in the field overlooking the lake." "Or maybe the field adjacent to the woods, sir. A bit more private if one is going to indulge in blood sports and such." "You could be right, Ethan Ben, but as you know, I'd never say so," I chortled. "First on the agenda before I decide is to find a suitable, discreet architect."
"Surely Carlos Palladino, who helped with the villa, is the answer, sir."
"Added to which, he's a bona fide a Roman, sir," replied Ben with a hint to a smile. "Plus, need I remind, sir, that Signor Palladino's donation still awaits?"
"No, you need not remind me, Bart Ben," I snapped. "However, Signor Palladino and his souvenir are not exactly wanted on the souvenir voyage at the moment, as it's a tad too close to home. We'll find some enthusiastic wannabe, Frank Lloyd Blight, instead, who won't say no to a fistful of reddies and who can be guaranteed to keep his trap shut."
"There's always Camp David, who lives locally, sir," suggested Ben with a hint of a smile, his eyes firmly fixed on the road ahead.
"No way, Jose," I crooned. "Camp David would be a disaster. Not only is he a malicious old queen, but a gossip who'd even make the Tower of Babel appear mute. No, we need to find someone young. Even well hung. Someone with oomph and not a raddled, addled old nightmare like David August."
"I'll put some feelers out, sir," said Ben as we turned through an impressive set of gilded wrought iron gates, guarding an elm tree-lined road leading towards the house. "Oh, how I simply love my Dorians," I tittered. Dorian's being the name I'd given to the two stone gateposts, topped with two simulated stone busts of yours truly. And though I'm not a soul prone to emotion, I have to admit I always get a lump in my elegant throat when they so gracefully welcome moi on my return to Magical Mannequin. Thanks to the two of them, like their namesake, I'll never grow old. Giving Ben a sideways glance, I said cheerfully, "Don't you agree, Ethan Ben? Or are you going to be nasty and revert to Bart?"
"As if I dare say anything different, sir," replied Ben deadpan as we drew to a halt in front of the elegant Georgian manor house.
It always amused me to find Ben seemed determined to call me sir, despite my suggestion he addressed me as Ripley, more catching than Dickie Green, in private. A somewhat arrogant suggestion, even though I say it myself. I had bought Mannequin at least a decade before, along with a splendid villa renamed Villa Jovial Secondo, in tribute to Rome's infamous Emperor Tiberius, and his villa of the same name built on the island of Capri. Villa Jovial Secondo, positioned halfway between the coastal towns of Portofino and Levanto, sat high on a hill overlooking the sparkling blue Mediterranean. Needless to say, the villa sported its own private beach, luxurious beach cabana, boathouse and jetty. I was still toying with the idea of a palazzo in Venice or an apartment in Rome, but as I kept saying to Tornidos, if Kay Thompson's Eloise found hotels such fun, why shouldn't we? Added to which, some of the other guests appeared to be so accommodating. So why not the equally accommodating moi? And even with Ethan Bart in control, does one really need the hassle of another residence, no matter how hedonistic?
"Any idea as to what time your guests are arriving, sir?" questioned Ben before opening the driver's door.
"I asked them to be here around five-ish, but knowing Miss Faror, it could easily be an hour or two later." Miss Faror being Madeline Matcap Faror, an interior designer of some standing, and her long-suffering beau, Gerard Kubeski, the well-known conductor. I gave a chuckle. Mr. and Mrs. Justice and the glamorous Miss Heidi should also be arriving around five. They are at least reliable. A new arrow for my bow is a Mr. Sidney Sapicon, a writer who lives locally and who could provide some light relief should Miss Faror decide to be a touch more domineering than usual. However, she may surprise us by being pleasant for once.
"Very good, sir," said Ben, opening the car door. Glancing at Tornadoes, waiting patiently to be let out, he said admonishingly, "Come on, Tornadoes, surely you can show a bit of enthusiasm at the impending arrival of Miss Heidi."
"Silly Billy, Ethan Ben," I crooned. "He's far more interested in what Jasper's got waiting for him in the casino than a bomb girl. Mr. T being living proof that the way to our four-legged friend's heart is via his stomach." Watching Ben walk away, a prancing, excited Tornadoes by his side, I gave a tight smile and said with a malicious snicker, "Oh, Ethan Ben, what a tangled web we weave when we first practice to deceive. As if the ever-alert, ever-scheming Wah isn't fully aware of your traitorous turnabout. Your somewhat bewildering, poisonous ploy. Do you truly believe that I, the Einstein come Stephen Hawking come Trayton Templeton, is that naive?" I gave a further snicker. "I'm pretty sure what happened is Brian Van Vesterhuizen staged his death, or else you shot some poor sod, presented to you as him instead, exactly as the two of you must have planned. More for you, Bart Ben, seeing the Van der Vesthuizens are well known in social circles, and yet there has been no mention of his murder, but certainly a photograph of him in one of the local papers online a few days ago, seen attending some glittering gala. Tut, tut, talk about a tsunami of oversight. Meanwhile, I'll play along, but truly, Ethan Ben, if that's what you're prepared to believe, then you're definitely more Bart than Ethan. So beware, my eventual ex-comrade in harms, as your rancid big toe could well be next." Stooping to give Tornadoes a kiss, I said in a conspiratorial whisper, "Not only your right big toe, Bart Ben, seeing I've now decided that the first two of my fight-until-the-death gladiators shall be you and Madden Roma's foul-mouthed other half, policeman hubby Christopher Glazebrook." Being one to revel in bearing grudges, I was determined, sooner than later, that Glazebrook would be made to pay for his rudeness to me, following my questionable dealings with his fortune-teller wife. Not only had Glazebrook insisted Madame Roma, his wife's professional name, and the tantalising Trayton never meet again,
He had personally returned the substantial fee I'd paid to his wife for her part in the spooking Cyril Soweto, a successful lawyer plus an even more successful witch doctor on the side. Soweto having been retained by my bete noir, South African agriculturalist Brian van der Westhuizen, to hassle, no, make that destroy, the lovely moi. Now let me take you back to a conversation I had a week before. Good morning, is that Mr. Crookshank? Crooky Crookshank, I'm speaking to. Tobias Swan, Swanny gave me your number. Should I require any assistance concerning a matter of utter discretion? A matter of utter discretion, snorted Crookshank. So apart from it being Mr. Utterly Lardy-Dardy-Bloody-Da, who's asking? My alternate name to Mr. Lardy-Dardy-Bloody-Da is Traydon Templeton, I crooned, refusing to rise to any baiting. Ah, yes, the posturing playboy billionaire, sniped Crookshank. And yes, Crooky Crookshank speaking. Before I could respond, Crookshank added gruffly, talking about Tobias, the bugger seems to have disappeared. Last I heard, he was on his way to some place in South Africa, Cape Town, I believe, a couple of months ago, but since then, zilch. Like your good self, Mr. Crookshank. Call me Crooky, interrupted Crookshank. Like your good self, Crooky. I haven't heard a word from Swanny either. Typical bloody Swanny, snickered Crookshank. Here today, gone tomorrow. Yes, indeed, I thought sourly. Gone forever, you mean? No thanks to the devious, very undead Brian van der Westhuizen. My team of conspirators, namely Monsieur Swan, McBride and Phillips, sent out there to deal with him, but mysteriously done away with themselves. So, Mr. Templeton, said Crookshank a tad impatiently, note I hadn't suggested he call me Traydon. How can I help you? Is there a chance we could meet later today, or tomorrow, if you're free? Otherwise, I will be out of town for at least a week. I suppose I can manage this evening around 6, replied Crookshank, somewhat disinterestedly. Brilliant, I crooned, in contrast to his apparent lack of enthusiasm. Have you a pen ready? Pen, pickaxe, or pliers, take your pick, sniggered Crookshank. For starters, I'm sure a humble pen will do nicely, I purred. So here's the compelling address. Now let me take you forward a few days. A Mr. Crooky to see you, sir. Says he has an appointment, growled Joe, the head porter over the intercom, his voice filled with suspicion. Thank you, Joe. Mr. Crooky is expected, I replied with a chortle. Please show him up. My words, show him up, implying, get a good look at him, Joe, as he could mean trouble. Giving Tornadoes a follow-me pat, the two of us made our way to the entrance hall, me in anticipation at meeting the probable answer to my present irritants, the Judas Bart Ben, the reincarnated Brian van der Westhuizen, and Hong Kong Harry the Hammer Hammer. A firm believer in first impressions count, I was wearing a cream blazer with a colourful Romero Brighto, silk square sprouting from the breast pocket, a black roll neck, red cords from Oliver Brown, along with the De Rigueur Gucci loafers sans socks. Tornadoes, not to be outdone, was sporting a red polka dot dock collar from Bow Wow, London's most exclusive shop for the discerning pooch. Opening the red lacquer front door, I stood in a balletic pose, waiting for the elevator to arrive. Welcome, Mr. Crookshank, a la Crooky, I crooned as the elevator doors opened and a strapping Jack O'Connell lookalike dressed in a black leather jacket, black T-shirt, black jeans and boots jauntily stepped out. That's me, Crooky Crookshank in the flesh, chortled the dazzlingly handsome young man, his cheeky grin displaying an equally dazzling display of whiter-than-white teeth. Proffering a tanned, rough-hewn hand, he added in a seductive, spine-tingling tenor. And you, sir, looking like a Fortnum & Mason Christmas tree in August, can only be Mr. Traydon Templeton, eccentric billionaire and collector of souvenirs extraordinaire. How interesting, I replied caustically, for as you'll see for yourself, apart from a collection of contemporary British artists, there's nothing one could describe as a souvenir. Obviously, we won't mention the Villa Jovie or Secondo, sniggered the newly dubbed Crooky. Though should I ever be invited, no doubt what I describe as your souvenirs extraordinaire will happily be on display,
this time in an open armoire and not hidden behind sliding doors. I couldn't stop myself from letting out an audible gasp at Crookie's reference to my collection of severed right big toes floating happily in them individual mason jars of formaldehyde.
Oh, and something else you may like to know, Mr. Templeton. Although I'm not of your persuasion, Crookie here is always prepared to go gay for extra. Substantial pay. Now, how about that drink before we get down to business? Business, that is. Not funny business.